Good morning, witches. This is the Witch Daily Show, coming to you from New Orleans, with host Tanya Brown. Our episodes span about 20 minutes long to give you just a little pop of magic. So, tune in, take a deep breath, and enjoy.
In a previous version of herself, Elaine Estrada was eminently sensible. Not that she isn't now, but sensibility has its place. She possesses the pragmatism of an eldest daughter who selected her university degrees based not on prestige, but on the projected minimization of her student loans. She waited until after marriage to lose her virginity, just in case. She was once primarily agnostic, appreciative of the self-sufficiency of domestic house cats, and to this day does not have a sweet tooth. Her morality is coded purely on the functions of the law itself. Elaine was married at 25 to a fellow law student, Justin Fruicente, which all parties agreed was very sensible. He was respectful and kind and intelligent and had a very bright future as a law clerk to a federal judge, whilst she set her course in transactional law. Elaine considered their sex life adequate, but was not surprised when her husband confessed he had fallen for someone else, an artist, which was, by all accounts, an insensible career path. In any case, Elaine wished him well and chose to move out of San Francisco, which was much too expensive to live practically on a single income, in favor of Tulsa, Oklahoma, where she could have a two-bedroom apartment all to herself, along with a stable income. Because she was so eminently practical, though, she did not disable her profile on various job hunting sites, allowing the door to remain open for greener pastures. Which is how she came to be invited for an exclusive interview by Mr. Down. The salary was extremely competitive, complete with phenomenal benefits, and her hours as her employer's in-house attorney would be strictly 9 to 5, with all holidays off and 2 weeks paid vacation. Elaine had never envisioned herself as private counsel, but she had also never envisioned herself divorced and living in Tulsa, and ultimately neither of those things caused her much grief. She also learned the name, or rather title, of her employer, and did not flinch. "Any questions?" Mr. Down asked at the end of Elaine's interview, after which he informed her the more trifling details of the job. Primarily, she would be handling contracts and any subsequent legal concerns, though they had long been standardized and were unlikely to be complicated. In short, nothing that would keep her in the office past 5. "What are the opportunities for advancement?" Elaine asked. "You will be a department of one, Miss Estrada," replied Mr. Down. "How has your role changed since working for your employer?" "It hasn't, certainly not in the last 6,000 years. "And what does a typical day look like?" "There is occasional wailing and gnashing of teeth. Otherwise, fairly normal." "Can you tell me about your new products or plans for growth?"
"This is more of a business as usual position, Miss Estrada," replied Mr. Down.
"I see." She paused. "I suppose I always assumed this sort of position was held by some slimeball Harvard grad with a senator for an uncle." She had actually never thought about it as a vocation before, technically speaking, more as a self-appointed form of torture from fellow law students who enjoyed the sound of their own voice. But it stood to reason that where there were contracts, there was an attorney involved. Mr. Down nodded. "A common misconception, but we find the job is best handled by someone more sensible. You must understand, Miss Estrada, that emotion will not serve you well here. Many supplicants will grieve and beg,
None, however, will present a sound legal argument. Isn't it my job to determine that? Elaine asked. If you give me the job, that is. Yes. Mr. Down considered her with his head tilted, then nodded approvingly. So are you available to start immediately? Immediately as in Monday, or immediately as in now? The room, which had been Mr. Down's office, reversed itself so that Elaine was the one sitting at the desk. Meanwhile, Mr. Down rose to his feet in a fluid motion of supreme ambiguity. The wall shrank down to about a proportion of 15% its original size. Ah, much cozier, Elaine said. Indeed, agreed Mr. Down, before dissolving into several tiny pieces that carried away on a breeze. Elaine's job is not very complicated, which is probably why her employer does not see the necessity of a Harvard degree. She has never met him, for whom Mr. Down serves as a proxy. Though she doesn't consider that unusual. At her old firm, she was very unlikely to run into any of the partners, and anyway, the office she works out of now is not in any sort of corporation headquarters where such a thing might be possible. It sits innocuously atop a barbershop and a vacant ice cream parlor, neither of which disrupt her work in any way. Elaine has a business card. It reads, Elaine Estrada, Devil's Advocate. People find it exceedingly amusing when she puts it in for free lunch raffles at nearby delis and cafes, though the supplicants who come to her office, clutching it in their hand, feel differently. Mr. Downs was correct that they are typically very upset, and there is a fair amount of teeth gnashing. Ultimately, though, the job is very simple.
From the pages of Which Way magazine comes a new collection of stories by longtime fiction contributor Olive Blake called Grow Your Own Optimist. Featuring a never-before-seen short story, Grow Your Own Optimist is often romantic, occasionally satirical, and always unexpected. These surprising tales of demons, devil's advocates, dystopia, and dating remind us that there is magic to be found in the dark places. Olive Blake is a New York Times bestselling author of The Atlas Six and several other books, including the Which Way anthology, The Answer You Are Looking For Is Yes, and the novella La Petite Mort. She lives in Los Angeles with her husband, Goblin Prince Toddler, and Rescue Pitbull. Find the new anthology series, Grow Your Own Optimist, by Olive Blake, wherever books are sold.
Witches, we hope you have a wonderful day, full of joy and gentleness and confidence. Links for this week's episodes, our website, Patreon, along with a free daily card pull can be found at witchpod.com. One stop for everything we talk about. Now, take one more deep breath and have a great day.
I had an abortion when I was 15 years old in my home state of Arizona in 1994. It was not a decision that I made lightly, but I have never for one moment doubted that it was the right decision for me. But so much has changed in Arizona and many other states since then. If I were that same 15-year-old in Arizona today, legally, I would have to get parental consent. I would be forced to undergo a medically unnecessary ultrasound, go to a state-mandated in-person counseling session designed solely to shame me into changing my mind, and then take a state-mandated 24-hour time out to make sure I really know what I wanted. And finally, I would be forced to give the state a reason why. Well, here is mine. It is my body, not the state's. Women and their doctors are the ones that are in the best position to make informed decisions about what is best for them. No one else. No bill that criminalizes abortion will stop anyone from making this incredibly painful decision. These bans will not stop abortion from happening, but they will drive women and girls and people into the shadows, which is what this has always been about, shaming and controlling women's bodies. In the week after I shared my story on my show, women were coming up to me in the street, in the supermarket, at my gym, with tears in their eyes, thanking me for my bravery. But the word brave didn't sit right with me. Why is it brave to speak to an experience that millions of people around the world throughout history have gone through? And then I realized it is considered brave because as women, we have been taught to feel shame about our bodies since birth. I am so sad that we have to sit here in front of a row of politicians and give deeply personal statements, because the why doesn't matter. It should not matter. I am a human being that deserves autonomy in this country that calls itself free, and choices that a human being makes about their own bodies should not be legislated by strangers who can't possibly know or understand each individual's circumstances or beliefs. I'm here today to help destigmatize a legitimate medical procedure and continue to encourage women not to allow themselves to be shamed for their choices. And finally, I am here today for my two little girls, Birdie and Cricket. My dream for them is that they will live in a world in which women are truly equal, with complete control over their own reproductive health. That is the dream I hold for all people, regardless of their privilege or parents or what state they live in. That dream is slipping further and further from reality with every ban passed. I hope that you, our elected leaders, can help us reverse the tide. Thank you. I look forward to today's discussion.